Chapter 16. It must have taken an hour or so of blind, aimless driving before Kit's heart slowed and her hands stopped shaking, before she could think clearly enough to make a plan. The scene she had fled came back to her in bright flashes. Stoker pumping his legs to get to his wife. Baby Ray grasping at the fringe on his mama's shorts. The barrel of a gun pointed straight at Kit. She exited the highway and found a hidden side street at the bottom of a double silo to get her bearings. She leaned across the seat, rummaged for a map of Texas in the glove box, and spread it on the dash. Her heart raced anew as she remembered the day Manny had nearly left her in Pecan Hollow, had pulled the Mustang to the side of the road, found the little town on the map, and promised he would take her there. She had visited the brink of freedom, sensed its promise and its ambiguities. And when he held her close and called her special, she had chosen him instead. She unclenched her hands and smoothed the map again, resolving to keep Manny out of her head for now. Police were looking, she was sure of it, and they'd nab her if she wasn't swift and careful. She would need the car to get to Pecan Hollow, but she couldn't keep it once she got there. It took her a few minutes of squinting at a worn and wrinkled map to find the town's name in the smallest font, not 60 miles from where she was now. She made sure no one was milling around and swapped out the plates for a spare set Manny had lifted off a Buick near Dallas. Then she started up the car for the last time, returned to the highway, and headed to Pecan Hollow. When she was within 10 miles of Eleanor's town, she started looking for a place to hide the car. Most of the fields around there were no good, too well kept and flat. But a few miles out, she found a small, dumpy lot with a broken wire fence and a faded for sale sign. She drove through the opening and, seeing no house and no animals that would bring a person around anytime soon, rolled through the high grasses toward an old barn. Though many of its heavy timbers were missing, it would provide good cover as long as no one came inside. She parked the Mustang under the hay-strewn loft and tossed the keys on the seat. She wiped down the surfaces for prints, pulled her backpack from the trunk, and took to the road on foot. Kit followed the crumpled map to Pecan Hollow, the rumbling engine echoing in her head like a song she couldn't shake. The sun behind her. She kicked through high grass instead of walking on the road because of how fast the cars were speeding by. She trudged across soppy ditches and muddy cow paths, stopped from time to time to slap fire ants from her ankles or pull up a sock that had slipped and gathered at the toe of her boot. In about 2 hours, she found the point where the highway broke off to the farm road that led to town. Without the map, she might have missed the sign, which was blocked by a bigger sign that read, Hunt Ridge Hills. Then she recognized this place as the turnoff where she and Manny had stopped and nearly gone to Pecan Hollow. The grasshopper clinging to her shirt, the old salt lick. She clapped her hands over her eyes, and there was a woeful sinking at her middle. Weary of walking, weary of the dull ache in her heart, she wished for sleep and amnesia and oblivion. Then a car sped past and its wind wrapped around her, bringing her to fresh alertness. "You're too close to stop now," she thought. She looked around to make sure she was on the right path. Where the old horse ranch had been, there was now a housing development fronted by a Kelly Green Lake and a great spewing fountain. The spray drifted over on a gust and wet her skin, and she remembered how long it had been since she had had anything to drink. She was hungry, and the inside of her mouth was sticky and hot. She was used to going without, fasting when there wasn't enough food, skipping out on water in favor of beer or cokes. But now that there was someone else to look after, She couldn't afford to neglect herself anymore. She began to wonder, was her baby thirsty too? The idea of denying her baby food and water threw her into a panic. She broke into a run. The running made her feel afraid, like something was chasing her, and her legs pumped faster, her toes just skimming the loose dirt road. Everything dry and dusty. She hated herself for not loading her backpack before she left that morning, for the 50 convenience stores she'd passed on her way over here. She looked around as she ran, but all she saw were trees and fences and the long asphalt road in front of her. Finally, she spotted a hose looped around the base of a tree in a great orchard, dribbling into the tree's roots. She cut across a culvert and ducked under the fence. Then she lay on her side so the hose didn't lose pressure and held the metal valve to her lips and drank. The water was warm and slippery, and she cried for joy and closed her eyes. When she drank till the water sloshed in her stomach and she felt like she'd eaten a big meal, she let the water trickle over her head and scrubbed the bristle where her long hair had been. She found a bandana in her backpack, draped it over her head, and tied it behind her neck. Her map wasn't detailed enough to show these country roads. She knew she couldn't be far, but wasn't sure how to figure out which place was Eleanor's, if she even lived there at all. That would be her luck, wouldn't it? To come this far and find out the woman had moved, or died, or never existed at all. She fished out the page on which she had written two addresses in that phone booth years ago and looked for an address along the fence line. Up ahead, she saw a young woman on horseback with a yearling on a lead. The woman had a full face of makeup and thick ginger curls clawed up into a bushy ponytail and a white western shirt tucked into jeans. Kit could see the woman had clocked her, even at a distance, from the way she straightened her posture and kept her eyes fixed. Kit guessed she'd be wondering what this brown-skinned, roughed-up girl was doing roaming these roads on foot. She might think she was up to no good. She might call the cops. Neither spoke until the woman was a horse's length from Kit. She pulled back on the reins and murmured to the young horse behind her to stop.
"You lost or something?"
she said to Kit, her tone circumspect but not unkind. Kit was a little stunned to be speaking with someone after the day she had had and tried to assume an air of calm.
"I'm looking for Miss Eleanor," she said, hoping the waver in her voice hadn't traveled.
"Do you know which house is hers?" Kit found the phone book page in her pocket and unfolded it, showing it to the woman.
"I have her address here, but I don't see any numbers on the houses."
The woman squinted down at her like she was trying to figure her out.
"She's an old relative of mine," Kit added.
"An old relative," the woman repeated, then seemed to reflect on this.
"Why are you on foot? Your car break down?"
"Yeah," Kit said. "A ways back. I left it in the shop. Anyway, she's expecting me, but I can't find her place. Can you point me in the right direction?"
"I don't know," the woman said.
"You don't know where her house is?" Kit asked. The woman shook her head.
"I don't know if I should tell you."
A panicked anger welled up in Kit that she knew would not do her any good. She could tell the woman she was pregnant and hungry and had been walking for hours. But she had learned from Manny the more desperate she seemed, the less people wanted to help. Most people wanted to help if they thought you were like them, but had hit a little hard but resolvable luck. If they felt pressured or manipulated, they would balk. Kit took a breath and let it out and held out her hand to the horse. The chestnut-colored mare nuzzled her hand and licked it as if searching for a treat. Its breath was hot and damp, and there was grassy green foam at the corners of its mouth.
Sorry, my name's Kit, she said, choosing not to press her luck. If you see Eleanor, you let her know I'm on my way. I'm sure I'll find it before long. Appreciate your stopping. She held up a friendly hand and continued walking. She hadn't gotten far when the woman shouted at her.
Keep going straight till you get to the T. Turn right and it's the first place on your left. Little white house with a chicken coop.
Kit turned around and waved.
Real nice of you, she shouted back.
In a few minutes, Kit arrived at a faded white house on a 3-acre parcel. A split rail fence, badly in need of repair, enclosed the overgrown yard in which bug-eaten zucchini, melons, beans, tomatoes, and lettuces grew at random. A cube of chicken wire filled with straw and a large crate housed a cheerful crew of orange chickens, which were scattered around, burbling, debugging the lawn. Something about the peacefulness of the scene frightened Kit, as if she might at any moment see Manny ambling toward her with sweet words in his mouth and a gun in his hand. But as she drove away, she had seen those men tackle him. He was drunk and outnumbered, and she'd taken the car. There had been nowhere for him to go. Nowhere but down. Her heart thumped around, and her lips began to buzz. Shh, she said aloud. The sound merged with the rustling trees. I'm safe, she thought. No, we are safe. She calmed and focused on the cast iron knocker in front of her. Before she even lifted her hand, an elderly white woman with a nest of rusty silver hair, twisted and pinned on top of her head, answered the door.
I heard you walk up, the woman said, casual and curious. How may I help you?
Are you Eleanor?
I am she,
Eleanor said quizzically. This woman seemed the right age, but her oatmeal-colored skin gave Kit pause. She had always imagined her mother's family looked like her. Kit turned to leave.
Sorry, I think I got the wrong Eleanor. I'm the only one in town, dear, the old woman called out. The other one is dead, so you might as well talk to me.
She hung there in the doorway, scouring Kit from head to toe with her gaze. Kit didn't know what to say. Her tongue felt as thick as foam. She was afraid of finding out that she had come all this way for nothing. If the other Eleanor was her aunt, then her only known family was dead, and she was back at the start. This woman sure didn't look like a relation, but she had an inviting sort of presence.
All right, then, Kit said. Eleanor chewed on the corner of her mouth. Won't you come in?
She shuffled in her quilted polyester house coat to the kitchen table and pulled out a chair. Kit followed her inside.
Sit, sit,
Eleanor told her, continuing to look her over with a dozen wrinkles gathered like bunting between her pinched, penciled-in brows.
Well, there's not much can be said on an empty stomach. Let's eat, shall we?
She pulled a jar of pimento cheese and a loaf of white bread from the refrigerator and made a thick sandwich for Kit. Kit took it and ate it in 4 bites and washed it down with a cold bottle of Dr. Pepper. She belched, and Eleanor laughed, her hand cupped at her mouth.
I know who you are, Eleanor said, looking down at her hands and fiddling with a cuticle.
Kit held her breath. She fixed her attention on the oiled skin of the table, its scent of orange peel, its grain whorled and mysterious. She could sense Eleanor start and stop, as if unsure of how to tell the story she'd begun.
They came to me when you were still a baby, Eleanor finally said. And they asked me, well, if I could raise you. But I couldn't, not then. I had lost my Emily that year.
She was only 19, but she got cancer in her bones, and it went everywhere, and fast. The doctors couldn't do a thing, and I was angry. I was older and widowed, too tired to raise a child alone. She bowed her head and shook it ever so slightly. Or so it seemed at the time. Several months later, I got to feeling better. I went to the county to see if you still needed someone. They said the nice family you'd been living with wanted to adopt you. At the time, I thought you'd be better off with a young family than with an old woman living alone. She began to cry, the tears leaving tracks in the powder on her sunken cheeks. Kit felt heavy. Her thoughts lumbered around drunkenly. She remembered Miss Rhonda, the smell of shampoo as she brushed and brushed her hair. To think that at one time there was a family who was interested in adopting her and ultimately chose not to was almost as rending as to learn now that Eleanor had passed her up too. There was music, very faint, coming from an upstairs room. It sounded like three-piece suits and forced wartime gaiety. "That nice family gave me up," Kit said, a hollow around her middle filling with a flicker of something that burned. "I was all alone. I wasn't safe at all." Eleanor wept into her fist now. "I can't believe you didn't try to meet me," Kit said. "It would have cost you nothing. But for me..." Kit trailed off and tried to swallow the pain that was wedged in her throat. "It would have changed everything. To know I had family, that I mattered to someone." Eleanor nodded her head as Kit spoke, and her eyes were wild, like she was sorting through every moment of the last 2 decades trying to find a sliver of meaning. "At the time, I don't know, it just seemed like more than I could bear." She squinted hard, a new crop of tears. "I am so ashamed, but you deserve the truth. I didn't want to think of what could have happened to you. It was easier not to think about it." Kit had come to expect rejection, but most of the people in her life had been shitty in general. What really stung was that Eleanor seemed decent and kind. How was she supposed to get over the fact that someone as nice as Eleanor had just turned her back on her? Kit tugged at her earlobe. "But I did wonder, time to time, how you were doing. I imagined your family had found a nice school for you in Houston, that you were awful smart, and maybe a little impetuous like the women in our family." She dabbed her face and reached out her hand, but Kit drew hers back. It was insulting, the thought of Eleanor telling herself lies so she didn't feel guilty. Lies that kept her from trying harder to find Kit. "I beg your mercy, dear." Kit swayed in her chair, woozy with it all. It was too much for one day. If she didn't keep moving, she feared she would sink into the mire of it. The black sludge of anger at everyone for letting her down. The shame of being unwanted. Regret she didn't leave Manny sooner. Regret she left him at all. If she didn't keep moving, she thought, she might never get up again. Kit did not know what to do with Eleanor's tears and hospitality and the sickening news that she had known about Kit, but declined to take her in. That there had been a family who had wanted to adopt her. What had happened to that family? Had they too given her back when they realized how defective she was? How could Kit stay here and not hate Eleanor for what she'd failed to do? The questions, and the feelings that came with them, swelled in a panic, then slipped away, like passengers swarming to the high point of a sinking ship that finally, quietly submerges. "I'm sorry to have bothered you," Kit said, her voice cool. She stood, tucked her chair under the table, and hoisted her backpack on her shoulders. Eleanor looked stricken. She made no move, only watched as Kit left and let the screen door clap behind her. "Too little, too light," Kit repeated to herself, and she marched away. Eleanor hadn't even gone after her. Again. A trio of hens skittered out of her path. She was halfway to the cattle guard when something thumped her between the shoulder blades. She stumbled forward and spun around. "The fuck?" Kit shouted, searching for the thing that had hit her. It was an orange, split and seeping juice. Eleanor marched down the steps in her house slippers.
"Now listen here, girl," she said, shaking her finger at Kit. "I don't know how you appeared here out of thin air and why you have barely more than the shirt on your back, but I'm not letting you walk away. You can't have come all this way to leave now. I don't know what all's happened to you."
More tears. Kit wished for her not to cry.
"Well, damn it," Eleanor said. "What's it gonna be?"
Kit toed divots in the dirt. Maybe the Mustang hadn't been found yet. Maybe she could drive to Mexico and learn Spanish and raise her baby near the beach somewhere. Or peel off to New Orleans, like Manny had suggested. Things were crooked there, he'd told her. Freaks like them would blend. A swell of nausea rose to her throat, and she remembered, again, that she could not afford to keep her pride. "I'm going to have a baby," she said. "I need somewhere to stay for a bit."
"A baby," Eleanor said.
Her fingers fanned open and she looked at Kit's belly, as if she very much wanted to caress it. But instead, she fingered the collar of her housecoat.
"That's just wonderful, dear. Of course you can stay here, as long as you need."
She nudged a tear from the corner of her eye.
"I feel a bit sheepish to ask you this, dear," she said,
and held a trembling hand to her breast.
"But can you remind me of your name?"
Kit shook Eleanor's hand, which was stronger than it looked. "Call me Kit." Eleanor kept hold of her hand, then drew her toward the front door.
"Kit, why don't I show you around the house?"
Kit followed Eleanor back inside. It had been ages since she had been in a home, since none of her foster assignments had been a home to her. Looking around properly now, she saw that the place was shabby but tidy. It felt like a set from a 1940s movie. Florals everywhere, on wallpaper, drapes, and upholstery. Cross-stitched pillows and lace draped over the chair backs. Eleanor pointed to a few framed photos clustered on the wall above a dresser in the living room.
"Here," she said to Kit. "Who do you think that is?"
In an oval, brass frame, a young woman dressed in a fringed flapper dress kicked a long leg high by her ear. Her eyes were defiant. The little black heart of her lips pursed in direct provocation.
"I was a dancer. Not very good, but well-loved by the gentleman."
Kit smiled.
"Not that kind of a dancer, of course," Eleanor said, hand over heart. "But I was pretty wild. I was lucky to be young in the 20s. Being a woman was just beginning to get interesting."
"Is that your husband?" Kit pointed to a photo of Eleanor in a white skirt suit and a tall, Nordic-looking man in his army best, clutching each other in front of a waterfall, soaking wet.
"My Amos," she said,
her voice catching on the sound of his name.
"That's us on our wedding day in 39, a few months before he shipped off to France. I was an ancient bride, nearly 40, but we had Emily a year later.
My little wartime miracle. Am I boring you with all this?
No, no, please, tell me, Kit said. I never knew anything about my family.
Eleanor's eyes fogged up again. She cleared her throat.
I'll tell you anything you want to know, dear.
Kit squinted at the next photo, a tiny daguerreotype of a man and a woman in shabby Victorian dress. The man looked too small for his suit, but the woman had a proud beauty, and her cheekbones, high and round, looked like Kit's. To see herself in another's face gave Kit a shock, an alertness. She leaned in, studying this woman, overwhelmed.
What's her name? Kit asked.
Her name was Charlotte. That's my mother, your great-grandmother.
Tears rose to Kit's eyes. She sniffed and blotted her face with her t-shirt.
Eleanor let out a sympathetic laugh.
Oh, dear. Oh, my goodness. I hope those tears are happy.
Kit's throat was all closed up. She blinked and forced half a smile to show that she was all right.
And that, grumpy fella, is your great-grandfather Patrick. Believe it or not, that's their wedding day, November 1st, 1899. I was born in 1900, she said proudly. That was the year of the great Galveston hurricane. It killed thousands, bodies floating everywhere, just awful. But somehow, we survived. They said I came out during the eerie silence in the eye of the storm. My mother would say it was because God wanted to hear me cry, but that's a load of bullshit, don't you think? She always insisted my being born in a church, alive and well, in a deadly storm, should have made a believer out of me. But I had never had the imagination to rely on the promise of something I couldn't experience for myself. I go to church to keep social, of course, but no one could convince me that there is anything other than this. Right here, right now.
Kit listened and nodded. She liked the way Eleanor told stories and the music in her voice. The way it swept you along, dipping here, rising there. Kit's voice was raspy and low, a stiff broom on a hard wood floor. There was no music in it.
So, Kit said, how is it we're related then?
Eleanor paused and looked serious, as if removed from the pleasures of her storytelling to a more sober world.
My only sister, Ruth, was your grandmother.
My grandmother, Kit repeated. Marie's mother, bless her heart.
Kit braced herself against the wall. Marie, her mother's name. It sounded like an exhale in her mind.
Marie, is she still alive?
Eleanor shook her head.
I wish I knew. Your mother was always wandering, never checking in. As a child, she was disobedient, brilliant, stormy. Taught herself to read before she was five, but wouldn't read nothing but comics. She could have been something.
Kit's skin goosed at the phrasing, and she remembered her mother's note. She will be something. Was that a refrain her mother had been told often? What had she been thinking when she had written it? Eleanor carried on. It seemed like she hadn't spoken or maybe even thought of her niece in a long time.
She was stuck being raised by your granddaddy, poor thing. Honestly, I feel sorry for the both of them. Lloyd was an old cattleman, as dry and dusty as they come.
Cattle? Kit asked.
She imagined a great sweeping ranch like the ones she had driven past, with their grand limestone entrances and pastures that seemed to stretch out forever.
Oh, yes, he bred the last of the Longhorns. They were a wild breed, you know, left behind after the Spanish came and ravaged the land and everyone in it. The cattle that remained had to adapt or die. You couldn't kill a longhorn if you tried. Heat. Pests, disease, predators, they survived it all. That was a long time ago now. They've gone out of fashion because they don't fatten up like the new hybrids do. And because of the spread of their horns, you can't pack them into cattle cars. People need their beef, I suppose.
Kit could scarcely believe these were her people. She strained to imagine herself growing up in a home like that, among beautiful animals, a place with history and purpose. But the girl in her mind had someone else's face.
Lloyd was a marvelous breeder, but he couldn't adapt. Or wouldn't.
Eleanor was quiet for a moment. Her eyes switched back and forth as if she were replaying a scene in her mind.
He was a drinker before the bust, but after, he pretty much pickled himself. Stuck there in that easy chair with a glass in one hand and a ciggy in the other. One leg crossed over the other like it was glued there. I'd go visit and bring food and try to be a good influence on Marie. But boy, she wasn't having any of it. She was a cold mystery, your mother. Wither you with a look. Reckless, always sneaking out, running with boys. More a danger to others than to herself, though. Selfish as the devil. I suppose she had to be, after what Ruthie did.
What do you mean? Kit asked, feeling like she might not want to hear any more.
Ruth took her own life, Eleanor said with a sigh. Young, I've never met anyone so disappointed in the world. I think she had Marie hoping a child would make her want to live for something. Marie must have been 7 or 8 when her mother died. Lloyd went broke trying to sell cattle nobody wanted, and then his wife killed herself, and Marie was stuck with him. A failed businessman and a widower. He didn't know how to braid a girl's hair or talk to her about love, and I can't imagine he was any good at helping her understand what had happened to her mother. She got the hell out of there as soon as it was legal.
Kit stayed silent. A great, heavy sadness rolled through her. Was misery her only link to these people? What good could this unborn child know with these genes? Was she condemned to a pained existence like all those who came before her? Kit was terrified of passing down this family gloom. She closed her eyes and imagined the life inside her. A glowing, orange being, a beating heart. She exhaled. There was a subtle shift within, like the baby was changing position. Then a settling. Had she imagined it? But it had been as real as a smile. There one moment, gone the next, leaving only a happy feeling behind. The child, she realized, had chosen to move and seek comfort. True, the little one was a part of her and made of her, but it was also separate from her, capable, even now, of choice. Her fears receded, and what remained was love. Maybe the world was shit. Maybe she couldn't count on anyone, even family. She couldn't change her blood, or her upbringing, or any of the things she had done. But she knew in her heart she would do whatever she could to bring this baby happiness. Chapter 17. When Kit woke up in a wooden twin bed with Western chintz sheets, she wondered for a minute what motel room she was in and how she'd gotten there. Out of habit, she rolled over and extended her leg to hook over Manny's and nearly slipped out of bed. She could hear chickens grazing outside the window. When she opened her eyes, she saw curtains that matched the sheets she was tangled in. A belly flop feeling hit her as she remembered peeling away without him, the murder in his eyes. Ditching the Mustang once she'd covered enough ground, walking, then running in a daze before arriving, finally, in Pecan Hollow. She had betrayed him,
left him alone to pay for their crimes. He would be outraged, even vengeful. Maybe she deserved to be locked up as much as he did, but it wasn't just about her now. After the belly flop, relief. Days ago, the idea of leaving Manny had seemed impossible. He had been the clever one, always holding the cards. Even after she decided to leave, she hadn't known how to put a plan into action. There was life with Manny, and beyond that, nothingness. But a plan had unfolded for her. Manny's terrible idea to hold up the barbecue joint had created an opening for her to see him more clearly, as violent and selfish and a threat. And although he had for so long carried her heart in his hands, she had answered the call to something more powerful than her fear of leaving him. Something holy glimmered in her heart. She rested her hand below her belly button and closed her eyes. She repeated her vow to protect her child and whispered a reassurance to them both. "We are safe, little one." She lay there long enough to notice the light change around her. The hurt she had felt yesterday on learning that Eleanor could have saved her and didn't was not so heavy as it had been. She was here at last with Eleanor. And yet she didn't feel like family, and sure didn't look it either. Smells of breakfast, hot coffee, sweet baked things, and hickory lured Kit from the comfort of the bed. She pulled on her jeans and went downstairs, bashful at the intimacy of having slept in this stranger's home. Eleanor stood at the stove, poking a panful of bacon with a fork. Behind her, the table was set for two and already covered in breakfast enough for six. A pitcher of orange juice, a basket of biscuits, butter and jam, sausages and eggs, sunny side up. "Sorry, you expecting company?" Kit said and glanced out the window. "Oh, you're up," Eleanor said. "I hope I didn't wake you. You need your rest, much more than you think. Here." She pulled out a chair for Kit. "Get started without me. I'm putting the last crisp on the bacon, but you might as well dig in while the rest of it's hot." "I don't feel right letting you wait on me, ma'am," Kit said, with manners she had rarely been called upon to use. "Bullshit! For God's sakes, child, you're pregnant. You've been on the road. Just sit there like I said and let me take care of you." "At least let me..." Eleanor shushed her and held the plate of foaming, popping bacon in front of her. "Subject closed," she said. "Here, take all you can eat. I'm not supposed to touch the stuff." She looked sad, briefly, then held up a finger, remembering something, set the bacon on the table. Kit took a clawful and dropped it on her plate. Eleanor was bent over the sink, drinking out of the faucet. "Forgot to take my little pill," she said, then turned off the faucet and sat down at the table. Some water had run down her neck and chest, and she wiped it away. Kit ate as her aunt monitored her every bite, head rising ever so slightly in sync with Kit's fork. "Is it good?" she asked. Kit sighed and nodded. It was quite possibly the most elegant, perfectly tuned meal she had ever had. She paused a moment to remember the taste of the biscuit, soft and steaming, with its butter and juicy jam, blackberry maybe. It was heaven in her mouth. Kit was not prone to noticing the nuances of food. She ate, felt better, moved on. But this meal begged for attention. Even the butter was perfect, sweet and bright with salt, just soft enough to spread. "How did you do this? It's normal food, but it's so, so much better."
"I have this theory," Eleanor said. "If you pay attention, you can tell what a thing is supposed to be. Like it's destiny, I suppose."
She reached into a wire basket of motley eggs, cocoa and cream, speckled and faintest blue.
So, this egg here, it's very particular. And if you heat it too fast, or don't give it enough fat to keep it from sticking, if you undermine it in any way, you prevent it from becoming wonderful. Even if it's good, or very good, you've shortchanged it. I suppose I don't see the point in messing with an egg if I can't help it achieve greatness.
I would never give so much thought to an egg, Kit said, buffing the yolk off her plate with a bit of biscuit. But I'm sure as shit glad you do.
Eleanor went over to the sink and plugged it up, then filled it with hot water and a long squeeze of Dawn. She scratched her nose and left a dollop of suds behind.
You know, I never have been able to cook for one. After Emily was gone, single portions look so pointless there on the plate. I really don't eat too much anymore. Your stomach shrinks as you get older, like it knows your body demands less and less, and it's this slow cycle of diminishment. I abhor a poor appetite. It has always confused me, and here I am now. I could eat a biscuit and a nice peach and call it a day. So I cook for two or more and hope someone invites themselves to supper, which they sometimes do. A nice boy named Caleb comes and collects branches, cleans the gutters, odd jobs I used to love to do but can't do well anymore. He stops by sometimes, keeps me company, eats all I've got, and nothing makes me happier.
Well, that works out then, because I'm always hungry, Kit said.
Eleanor shook her head and smiled at the dishwater.
I just can't believe you walked up to my door, she said softly.
As kind as Eleanor had been, this life was all so new. Kit understood she should be grateful, and she was. She should stay here as long as she was welcome. But it was hard to trust a good thing that was so foreign to her. She was restless and found herself questioning the value of staying still. If she stayed, she could get bored or stuck with people she didn't like, or worse, she could get caught. Of course, she could get caught on the run, too. And here she had Eleanor to vouch for her, a nice old white lady nobody had reason to doubt. But the thought that made her tearful and determined to stay, a picture of her smiling child hung up on the wall. Kit thought of Manny that night, when all the signs of this new reality dimmed with the lights, and she lay alone, eyes closed, searching for sleep. She missed the warm shape of him in bed, the narcotic effect of his smell. Defiantly, she remembered only the parts she wanted to. His body, the weight of it against her. His easy laugh and the puckish look in his eyes when they pulled off a proper con. The way he seemed to read her wants before she'd even allowed herself to know them. Even now, it was impossible to imagine not missing him. He had been her only companion, her protector and friend for nearly as long as she could remember. Choosing the right thing for her baby had been easy, but no logic, not even the truth about Manny's character, would cut him out of her heart. The next day, Eleanor wasted no time in orienting Kit to Pecan Hollow and announced they would attend the spaghetti supper that night. Eleanor hoisted herself into her brown and white Chevy pickup, grunting a little when she landed on the bench seat. Kit slid in next to her. 10 minutes into the drive, they came to town. Eleanor parked and idled in front of the grocery store and gave Kit the 10-second tour from inside the truck. This was as close to a central square as the little town had. A post office the size of a roomy outhouse, a modest grocery store, Cleet's feed store, the police station, and a 24-hour diner. A defunct railroad section split the central square on the bias,
and disappeared under a paved crossroad.
"That there's where you get your groceries and your sundries," Eleanor said, pointing to the crumbling, windowless stucco building in front of them. "I like to do my own shopping, but I might send you out for the odd something or other."
She turned and gestured to a dusty barn-like structure that was covered in corrugated aluminum.
"I get my chicken feed from Cleat. It's usually all right, but I check the bag every time because once it came moldy and sickened my whole little brood. If there was someone else in town, I'd take my business there. But in a town this small, you can't be choosy."
Kit half-listened and rolled her face around the steam of cool air coming from the vents. Eleanor prattled on, clearly delighted to play tour guide. She pointed her index finger.
"There's the police. Not much need for them here, poor things. They're bored to tears. If you ever get the truck stuck in the mud, they'll tow you out. Come to think of it, I did have to call them one time when I found one of these druggy boneheads sleeping in my bushes. I think he tried to break in, but nodded off before he got very far. Didn't even budge when I lashed his wrists together with zip ties. Cops came pretty quick and hauled him off, still fast asleep."
Kit smiled in acknowledgement of Eleanor tying up a sleeping intruder. But inside, her guts twisted to see how close they were to police.
"Anyway," Eleanor went on and gestured toward a flamboyant 1950s building with a swooping pitched roof. "If you get sick of my cooking, and you won't, right there is the diner. They make a pretty decent Reuben. I go there for lunch sometimes just to get out and see what's what."
The diner looked out of place next to the humble, almost impermanent construction of the other buildings. They got back on the road and in a few minutes arrived at Friends of Jesus Community Church, a one-room steepled chapel with a neighboring outbuilding. The grounds were neatly kept and teeming with people.
"Here we are," Eleanor said.
The lot appeared to be full, so she pulled off the road and parked in the grass.
"I've been going to this church since I moved here in 52. There's other churches nearby, but they're all the weirdo sects. The Jehovah's, the Mormons, the Catholics. A little history for you," Eleanor said and leaned across the bench. "And you're not hearing this from me. But originally, the Friends was founded by a traveling evangelist, Jimmy D. Buckner. Well, everybody loved him until he was caught fondling one of his teenage congregants. Tom Sutter, that's our pastor now, he seized his moment and took over for old Jimmy D., who, of course, left town utterly disgraced. Tom's a decent man. Zealous for Jesus, with none of those lurid predilections that got Jimmy D into trouble."
Kit took note of how Eleanor lit up at the mention of scandal. It was not an interest Kit shared, and she wasn't sure how to respond. She got out of the truck and jogged around to help Eleanor, remembering the effort it had taken her to get in. As they made their way across the grass to the buffet, Kit admired the Christmas lights strung out under the canopy of a pair of oak trees. Long picnic tables covered with butcher paper and paper towel rolls. At the far end, a portly, perspiring man with a warm expression stood over a steaming stockpot. He clacked his tongs like a crab.
"Illy, come, I'll trade you the first serving for some of the garlic bread I smell."
Eleanor and Kit carried the half-dozen sheet pans of her famous garlic sesame loaves, made from scratch, to the service table.
"That's all right, Tom. We'll wait our turn," Eleanor said, smiling and angling slightly toward Kit. "I want you to meet my great niece, Kit Walker."
Tom hesitated for a fraction of a second. Then he took her hand with both of his and shook it in a kindly but overly cozy way.
"How do, dear? Are you hungry?"
Kit nodded and quarter smiled.
"I could eat."
More people arrived.
Kids tumbled out of the truck beds and went straight for the jungle gym. Parents yelled out rote warnings to play safe and hurried to get a good spot in line. Little old men helped little old ladies from their seats, making a patient, glacial trip across the lawn to a special line for seniors and handicapped. Kit shrugged back against a tree, gravely aware that she did not belong. As far as she could tell, they all looked white and churchy and straight-laced. They seemed to have roles and rules and some kind of a common understanding of the way things were supposed to go. It was like being dropped in the middle of a foster family again, where everyone knew their place but her. Surely none of them had grown up with a string of strange families, or had robbed people from a young age, or hung out with prostitutes. When she tried to imagine what it would take to be a part of this group of people, let alone enjoy them, she felt even more alone. She had never been a chameleon, and since she didn't know how to blend in, she just had tried to disappear. Here, she would be introduced around. She was attached to Eleanor. She wondered what would be expected of her. Would she have to start going to church or dressing nice or laughing at people's jokes? She didn't know how to be anything other than what she was. Rough, suspicious, quick to anger. She feared it wouldn't be long before she did something to let Eleanor down or even get kicked out. And where would she go then? Eleanor turned back and squinted.
You look ill. Are you morning sick?
No, just... Kit took a breath and tried to shed the worry for now. I never went to anything like this. Pastor Tom looked at his watch and banged the stock pot lid with a spoon.
Okay, everyone, let's hold hands and say grace.
The whole lot of them, a couple hundred or more, found someone's hand to hold and bowed their heads in prayer.
Dear gracious Lord, he said, his tone conversational and close, we just thank you for bringing us together tonight and for the blessings of food and shelter. And we just pray that we may be humble and serve you justly, O Lord. In Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen. There was a chorus of rowdy hoots from the crowd, and people reformed their line with military responsiveness. A woman came by with a chicken enchilada casserole and inserted herself in the conversation.
You're new,
she said to Kit, with unnerving interest. She shifted the casserole to her left hip and held out her right hand, palm facing down.
Sugar-fi Prentice, but you can call me Sugar.
She stood nearly a foot taller than Kit and weighed 100 pounds more. She had cherubic features with spherical chin and cheeks, a beaming complexion. Thick blonde hair curled and shaped into a halo the width of her shoulders. Kit would later find out she had once been a successful Avon model. A string of handsome modeling checks had bought her a tidy set of ivory teeth, at which Kit stared baldly. 4 sons and an absent husband had nearly doubled her catalog measurements and only enhanced her beauty. Kit touched what was left of her hair, wished she had a hat to cover herself.
I'm sorry, but I have to ask,
Sugar said, leaning in.
What happened to all your hair? Was it cancer or something?
Kit didn't know how long she could stick around for this scrutiny. She could feel Eleanor straining to hear the answer and realized she hadn't told her aunt anything about the events leading up to her arrival, and her aunt had kindly refrained from prodding.
No, Kit said. I guess it keeps my head cool.
Sugar threw back her head and laughed, and all the sumptuous parts of her jiggled.
You're too much.
She reached over and touched the side of Kit's face. Kit willed herself not to jerk away and wished Eleanor would bail her out.
You're so tan,
Sugar said.
Lucky? Wish I could get some color on me, but I'm just pink as a pig.
Kit knew a backhanded compliment when she heard one. She knew Sugar and probably everyone else here was going wild, wondering how this hairless brown girl could be related to Eleanor. People often thought she was Mexican, and maybe she was, blood-wise. Manny had given them some kind of elevated status on account of his blue eyes and charming demeanor. But she didn't know anything more about being Mexican than they did, except what it felt like on the other end of a white person's upturned nose.
Those are my kids over there,
Sugar Faye said, changing the subject.
We were blessed with four healthy boys.
She pointed a trim, bubblegum pink nail at a scrum of three blonde boys between the ages of 6 and 10, and a broad-shouldered man with a toddler on his shoulders standing watch. They were lighting black cat firecrackers in an anthill, scattering with the explosions. Batting ants dispersed in the blast from their arms and legs.
I don't know how you do it,
Eleanor said. Sugar Faye looked skyward.
Gracious Lord, please bless me again, but this time won't you let it be a girl?
She sighed and gestured with the casserole.
Well, I better get this on the sterno before the cheese congeals. If you need anything, anything, don't hesitate to just give me a ring. Easy to remember. 333-QUADRUPLE-4. Everyone in town knows to call me if they need the slightest thing or just want to, you know, dish and stuff.
She left in a cloud of her sweet perfume. Kit was already exhausted.
Let's eat before those javelinas beat us to it,
Eleanor said and took her place in line. Kit was hungry, but the line moved fast, and in a few minutes it was their turn to take a plastic tray and place setting each and go through the buffet. Kit heaped the orange spaghetti on her plate and took a stack of garlic bread slices, skipping the wet green beans. In front of them was a thin young man with tight curls, a crisp white button-down, and new Wrangler jeans. He seemed to be looking for a place to sit.
Caleb,
Eleanor said, touching his shoulder. He startled as if ripped from a daydream.
Sorry, didn't mean to alarm you,
Eleanor said, laughing.
Would you like to sit with us? That is, if you're not already committed to someone else.
She winked at Kit. No, ma'am, I'd like that very much, he said, missing Eleanor's innuendo. Eleanor held out her hand to present Kit.
I'd like you to meet my niece, Kit. She's new in town.
He faltered a moment, surprised, perhaps at the news that Eleanor had a niece. Blotches appeared on his neck like he'd been slapped. Oh, yes, he said, dusting off the nerves. Caleb, how do you do? Kit held out her hand to shake, and he took it. His skin was soft and warm, and his grip was strong. His face was nice and plain with squinty eyes, as if he could only take in so much of the world at one time. It was a relief to be near someone who seemed like he didn't fit in either. Eleanor led the way to a nearby table, and they all sat down to eat. Kit started shoveling spaghetti in her mouth. It was hot and good. The garlic bread was heaven, sharp-smelling and pillowy. She noticed Caleb's darting glances. When their eyes met, he smiled for the first time and his whole face opened up, making him suddenly handsome when only a moment ago he had been unremarkable.
How's Vera doing?
Eleanor said, twirling a shock of noodles onto her fork.
Is she well?
He nodded. Some days better than others, ma'am, but today her spirits are good. He looked at Kit, a bit fearful, then scanned the crowd, lifting out of his seat. She's over there by the beanbag toss. You want to go say hey? He pointed to a thin woman in a melon-colored ruffled dress that looked both expensive and tattered. She wore a shawl around her shoulders, though it must have been 80 degrees. and drew long, cheek-swallowing sips from a tall glass.
Oh, that's all right, Eleanor said, brows arched high above low eyelids. She looks like she's having a nice moment to herself.
Then she pressed on with her introduction.
You and Kit are about the same age, aren't you?
Oh, maybe, he said, his eyes fixed on his plate. I'm 18.
Wonderful, Eleanor said, looking pleased.
She adjusted her glasses and peered up at him, smiling eagerly.
Why don't you tell Kit a little about what you kids do around here?
His blotches deepened.
Oh, I don't get out much, he said,
then sat up a little straighter. He shifted and glanced at Kit, quickly as if he might be burned.
I suppose people meet up at the diner late nights and go to the movies in Katy. At least that's what my brother does.
You're being modest, Eleanor said. Caleb's in the police academy over in Richmond. Isn't that nice, Kit?
Kit's heart hiccuped a little at the word police. Harmless though he seemed, she was worried he would find her out, hear something about a strange woman on the run.
I never thought of police work as nice, I guess.
Kit!
Eleanor scolded.
No, she's right, ma'am, he said, straightening his shoulders, his voice just sweeping a lower register. It's a thankless way to make a living, but someone's got to do it.
A stocky man in his 40s wearing a beaver-skin cowboy hat sat down next to Kit, so close his thigh pressed against hers. She leaned away.
Who is this pretty thing, Ellie? She your new maid?
Habla English, usted,
he said slowly, lips and breath heavy with alcohol.
I'm a fool for that south of the border look.
Kit ground her molars to keep from lashing out.
New maid? What's wrong with you, Larry? She's my niece.
Kit clutched her utensils and scooted toward Eleanor to get some room. She didn't like the casual way this man tried to make less of her. Caleb wiped his mouth and pushed his tray aside. He pressed himself halfway up to signal he was ready to step in.
Pardon, moi, for trying to give a compliment, Larry said, not the least bit contrite. Oh, shut it, Eleanor said. You leave us be. Look, I'm just trying to say welcome and hello and nice to meet you. Say, Senorita, why'd you chop off all your hair?
He said, and pinched a tuft at her neck. Like a sprung trap, she twisted his wrist with one hand and held a fork to his ribs with the other. She stared him down. He didn't struggle, but his eyes swung wildly around the area looking for aid.
Okay there, ha ha, simmer down, he said nervously. Fair enough, fair enough.
She twisted harder.
Ow, okay, loud and clear, uncle, uncle, I said.
He looked around again, embarrassed. People had stopped eating and watched. Eleanor stifled a smile. Caleb, who had rushed to Kit's side to help, backed away in recognition that he was not needed. When Kit let him go, Larry slowly stood up and hitched his leg over the bench. He shook out his wrist and walked away, muttering. Kit pulsed with adrenaline. She was done with all this. The new faces, the names, and comments, and making nice. She wanted to go home, burrow into her sheets, and sleep for a year. People started talking and eating again. Caleb approached her, this time with a bandana, folded and damp in his outstretched hand.
Here, it's clean, he said.
Oh, she said, looking herself over. Am I hurt?
No, it's just you got a little spaghetti on your shirt.
Kit saw the pulpy smear of sauce on her gray t-shirt, the noodles sticking to it. She took the bandana and met Caleb's friendly eyes. There was a loosening,
ever so slight, in her chest.
He shouldn't have talked to you like that, Caleb said, his face pink with outrage. He's got no right.
Kit was too worked up to respond to him, but she appreciated the show of solidarity. Without mentioning it, Caleb walked them back to the truck and helped Eleanor scale the tall step up into the cab.
Come see us sometime, Eleanor said,
and Caleb nodded.
You're gonna stay a while?
He asked in Kit's direction. He looked hopeful.
A while,
she said, still too stressed to garnish her words. Eleanor cranked on the engine and stuck her arm out the window as a farewell. The dark, quiet drive back to Eleanor's helped to settle Kit's nerves. She wondered if she ought to be ashamed for acting the way she did, but it wasn't her habit to repent. Manny had told her never to apologize, even to him. He had said that if she went around being sorry all the time, people would sniff out her weakness and exploit it. But now she was with nice, straight people, people who lived together and stayed put. She tried to give Larry the benefit of the doubt. Maybe the old cowboy was just being friendly. Or maybe he was still a jackass, but just an average jackass. Maybe she didn't need to launch a nuclear response when someone bothered her. More than anything, she worried Eleanor would be disappointed in her. Eleanor broke the silence.
Well, I can tell you one thing. That isn't the last time old Larry is gonna put his foot in his mouth, she said. But he's gonna think twice before doing it with you.
I guess I didn't have to stick him with a fork, said Kit.
He had it coming to him, Eleanor said, shaking her head. He was way out of line.
Kit laughed, grateful that her aunt didn't fault her.
Apart from Larry,
Eleanor said, turning on her high beams as they crossed over the creek, black and glassy in the dark.
What did you think of the supper?
Kit wished her honest answer were also positive. She didn't want to hurt Eleanor's feelings, but she had nothing good to say.
I just don't get it, Kit said after a while. Does everyone really enjoy being together all the time? Don't you run out of things to talk about?
Eleanor laughed.
To be honest, I find the conversation dull mostly. Weather, cattle, so-and-so is late on their payments to such-and-such,
she said and leaned in.
But the gossip can be pretty juicy.
Kit just shook her head.
Is that why people get together? To talk about each other? Well, kind of, Eleanor said. But it's more than that. The backbiting is just a fearful way of saying we care. We're interested. Take Caleb's mama, Vera. She drinks too much. Fact, all she does is drink. And she blames it on the death of her husband. Tragic, really. Had a heart attack in the shower and fell and cracked his skull. Coroner said he would have survived the heart attack, but it was the fall that killed him.
She pursed her lips and shook her head.
Anyhow, the drinking got worse after Bud died, but she had always liked getting drunk more than anything, even more than she liked her kids.
But what's the use in telling me that? Kit asked.
It's none of my business. Well, I'm getting to that. On account of being nosy, people took it upon themselves to look after Caleb and his brother. You know, offer them rides when his mama was too drunk to drive, or give them after-school jobs to keep them out of her hair, take them to the movies, you know, fill in the gaps.
Kit felt a slap of jealousy at the thought of so many helpers quietly raising those boys. She crossed her arms and held herself.
Doesn't it drive you nuts, though? People prying into your personal life?
Eleanor thought for a bit and sighed.
I think we take the good with the bad because no one really wants to be alone. People need other people. That's just how it is.
Kit pressed her forehead against the window and gazed out. The moon, just waning, brushed the treetops in its light. They drove through the center of town. Everything closed save the diner, with its steeply slanted roof and neon sign that read, "Quality food, coffee, pie," a beacon in the night. The idea of Eleanor had been a beacon to her, guiding her to better times. And she had been right to follow its light. This baby would need someone like her aunt, someone who was excited about flipping a pancake or naming a chicken. Kit probably needed her too. But the trade-off, all these people stuck to one spot and her stuck right there with them, was overwhelming. She had felt more alone in that throng of friendly people than she had on the road so many years ago, kicking through tall grasses, trying to find home. With Manny, it had been simple, a planet of two. She realized how much he had shielded her from having to deal with others. He always drew the attention his way, turned on his brilliant charm, while she did her job, picking pockets, lifting jewelry in his shadow. She imagined raising this child with him, passing down all the little lessons he had taught her, and felt at once a wistfulness for the order of it and ashamed for having nothing better to give her baby. No religion, no manners, no reliable sense of right and wrong. She had been so sure of herself when she drove away from Manny, choosing what had felt like a better path. She had been so focused on the reasons she had to get away from him, she hadn't known how flimsy she would feel without him and the life they had built together. Right or wrong, she missed him now more than ever.